Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, how thankful are you that you and I were able to secure significant others before the time that somebody mathematically solved dating?
We're going there, huh? So one of my least favorite things about NBA Twitter is everybody's appetite to dunk on people.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this. I was like, I'm laughing at this and I feel bad about it. And then like someone was like, David Chia was like, you read what he wrote, right? Like, don't feel bad on this one. I was like, you know what? You're right. So yes, I'm glad that we were able to figure out that equation before somebody else did. Boy, oh boy, man.
you and I, like, little did we know that the podcast or the content everybody was looking for was a couple basketball nerds, like, explaining dating.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're out of our element right here, man.
Absolutely. There's like five people who are going to get that joke. It was something that happened late night, last night in NBA Twitter. And it was my favorite thing. Somebody mathematically solved dating. And then just like double, triple, and quadruple down this morning, which was incredible to behold.
Yeah, it was like very confident, like that they mathematically solved dating. That's what made it funny, that it wasn't like, hey, I have this theory. It was like, nope. All right, we're done with that. Glad we figured this out. You're welcome, humanity.
That is not what we're going to focus on for today's show. We are actually going to break down and preview Anthony Davis's first season with the Lakers. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, his previous seasons. Last year, there really isn't much to take away from it because of how weird the circumstance of that he was playing under in New Orleans last season. So we'll look to years prior and some of that stuff. And then, you know, I have to apologize to Pete because apparently you really wanted to break down Alex Caruso's season.
Man, I was so hurt. Like, of all the look, you can lie to people about me on Twitter and I'll be mildly annoyed, but like, I'm not even mad. I'm just hurt. Like, I couldn't be involved in the Alex Caruso preview. That's I was going to bring that up myself. But yeah, man, I'm not even mad. Just hurt.
I had to welcome Harrison on, man. He's the chairman of the Big Balder Brand LLC. Like, that's his deal. That's his that's his lane. So I had to bring him on there. I did say I'll run this by you. We'll mess around here because, like I said, last year's Anthony Davis season is kind of weird to break down. We'll get to that in a bit, I promise. But I went out on a limb, and I think that Alex Caruso is going to get some Most Improved Player buzz.
Interesting. I probably wouldn't go that far because a lot of times it has to do with opportunity and points per game
is
really a driving factor of that. But I do think I think that it's easy to have like a cult following of Caruso, and I really like him. If he shows himself to be a legit backup point guard in the NBA this season, I think it'll be a success. But that's like my level of expectation for him.
Yeah. If he finishes the year, though, as the starting point guard on a championship contender, given where he came from last year, mm-hmm. like that's – if you just look at the basic definition of the award, which, you know, it kind of changes based on the year. Like last year there was – like Pascal Siakam was the one who won it. D'Angelo Russell was the one who was also in the running for it. They both had very different – you know, improvements, I would say. So, you know, it's an amoebic award, but just at the basic definition of it, I'm banging the drum. Alex Caruso, 2020.
You know, I don't think that him having a season that similar to what Fred VanVleet had in Toronto this past season, I don't think that's out of the question. That's like the area of, and that was a dude that was on the court in the final five of tight games in the finals. So I don't think Caruso is going to start, but I think he'll be finishing a decent share of games.
Yeah. Steph Curry switched off of Fred VanVleet. We have it on video. Everybody saw it. let's start though on the Anthony Davis subject here. Obviously prodigious talent. Obviously super weird situation he was playing in last year. So what, if anything, are you taking away from last year? Do you think we should just skip to the years prior and analyze those years for what they were?
There's one element of his season last year that I thought was really interesting that could carry forward, mm-hmm. and that was his playmaking. He averaged a career high in assists and 3.9 assists mm-hmm. with just 2 turnovers per game, which is around how often he was turning the ball over. But in previous years, you look at his assists, 2.3, 2.1, 1.9. Mm-hmm. When you look back on the tape, there was a lot of like dribble handoff action. He wasn't making really high-end type reads, but he was kind of the center of the offense, and rather than being just a pick and roll guy or down on the block, he was a guy with the ball in the middle of the court deciding where the ball went. And so that's something that on a team that doesn't have a ton of playmaking outside of LeBron, I'm curious to see if that's going to be able to translate to this year's team. So that is the one thing I take from last year.
Yeah. We'll talk about, you know, what position he wants to play and all that stuff as we go along and get further into the show. But yeah, that is a great point. I mean, that's a full assist and a half more than every other season that he's played, his next closest season, and that's a significant jump, while his turnovers actually went down
right
from the year prior. Right, a year 2 years ago he averaged 2.4, he dropped that to 2.2 and then down to 2.0 assists last year, again only in 56 games. And this is one thing, like you talked about the playmaking ability, and the show that we analyzed LeBron James, one of the things that we really harped on was his health. Both these guys are walking into next year probably the most rested they've really mm-hmm. ever been. And given how much creative duties and responsibility they're both going to have to carry, that's something that I'm legitimately really looking forward to.
Yeah, likewise. And I think both guys have something to prove. I think the table is set for an MVP run for Anthony Davis this season. I think that a lot of the factors are in place. And I think that he's been a guy that has been under the radar, I think, for a lot of people publicly, that there are some elements of his game that I think are overrated, and I said this prior to prior to the Lakers acquiring him. But I do think that this is really a perfect environment for him, and then that extra rest is going to be huge for him. Now, in watching him, and this was true even I noticed this even before diving back into the tape, he's a guy who's going to scare us like once a week in getting banged up somehow on the court and having to go back to the locker room or go to the bench and get checked out. We're going to be like gasping for air, waiting for, and usually it works out. He's, you know, he played 75 games in each of the two previous seasons and was healthy this year. He was a healthy scratch for a lot of those games of the 56 of the 26 that he didn't play. He was healthy. It was just the trade weirdness and all of that. So he's, I think, a little more durable than his reputation is, but he does have a lot of those little scares, and that's something Laker fans will have to get used to.
Yeah, I used to play fantasy basketball. I kind of miss it, but I used to play fantasy basketball, and he was my first keeper. We changed over to a keeper league, and he was my keeper, and I used to call him Anthony Data Davis. Like, it used to be.
Yeah, I've had him too in fantasy leagues, and it's like either 42-17 or maybe he's not going to play, right?
Yeah, so right.
Yeah, it's kind of a mad guy to have.
Last thing from years prior from Anthony Davis. So his rookie and sophomore year, he averaged 0.1 three-pointers attempted. The next year was 0.2. The next year after that, jumped up to 1.8, stayed at 1.8. Year after that, 2.2, and then last year, 2.6. So we've seen a steady increase in number of three-pointers he's shooting per game. I would hope that that continues to climb. I'd like to see that, honestly, above 3.5 or 4 this year.
Yeah, that's the range I'd like to see as well. It'll be interesting to see how he vibes with Boogie. I've been getting into the old Pelicans tape from when they played together and kind of how they vibe together. And much to my surprise,
Boogie, it was AD who was the role.
Yeah, Boogie was the pop guy, right? Like, that was basically their roles. Was AD was crashing the rim, which is understandable, and it was Boogie who was popping out, and not only to shoot but to playmake from out there. So if we see a repetition, so if Boogie starts, which we don't know, but if Boogie starts, that's probably the right way to go, because Boogie's less of a role threat. He doesn't quite have that, especially post Achilles, doesn't have that vertical game, and he can pass from the perimeter, although he makes some mistakes there. Boogie really has to get his 3-point shot back, but if that happens and if they use him that way, it might be hard for AD to hit that 3.5 to 4 per game. But if not, then I could see him in that range.
Yeah. All right, what we're going to do is we're already kind of starting to segue into it anyway, so we're going to take a quick second here, step away. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things individually we'd like to see him improve on. And, you know, this is something you and I have already talked about on a couple previous shows. It starts with some fundamental things, and that's where Phil Handy will play a role. So let's take a quick second, come back, and we'll talk about where Anthony Davis's individual improvements can take place. It's insane. Like, it feels like he's been in the league for a really, really long time. He's 26.
Yeah, man. No, he's younger than Buddy Hield, which is crazy. Like, yeah. And hell, I think Caruso is almost his age, right? Like, maybe, you know, looks older than him, but he's a guy that still has room to go in his game. He's a superstar, but has not hit his capacity. A lot of it has to do with that shooting and ball handling. It's a lot of perimeter stuff. He's actually a very good, he's, in my opinion, the best ball handling big in the NBA off of the dribble. Now, the next component of that is, can you make plays for others off of that?
Yeah.
He made a step in that direction last year, although more of it was off of handoffs. Now, can he drive and kick, drive and dish, be able to, he's going to draw that second defender. So how does he manipulate that to get open shots for his teammates? That's one of the primary next steps for him on the offensive end.
One thing that makes me a little nervous with the steps forward he could take this year. Like, we actually kind of saw it with Kyle Kuzma and the video that Lethal Shooter put out there, and then you grabbed a clip of it and you showed the differences in set point that they were working on there. I also kind of really noticed a difference in posture there. And those are fundamental tweaks that you're making there. Those are things that your body doesn't even recognize that you're doing them as you're doing them, those mistakes, right? And where Boogie, or not where Boogie, where Anthony Davis kind of, the places from which he will gain any kind of improvement are going to come from those fundamental details, the footwork stuff, the posture stuff. Like, when I watch him dribble, his bend in is almost solely in his back. He really gets his head way above his feet, or in front of his feet.
Way in front.
And so, you know, this is where, again, hiring somebody like Phil Handy is going to be such a great hire. It's just a matter of whether Anthony Davis is going to be dedicated enough to make those tweaks to his game that he doesn't even recognize he's doing wrong. And that's always where, you know, it's easy to improve when you have something glaring that you have to really focus on. When it's a small thing like this, that's a tougher thing to really work on. But, you know, even in this regard, he's alongside LeBron James, who got by on a lot of the same things that Anthony Davis got by on for a significant portion of his career. And then James really started focusing on those details. And, you know, like, everybody kind of laughed at the Taco Tuesday night, but it really makes me excited that these guys are spending a lot of time together, because those are lessons that LeBron can impart onto Davis.
Yeah, I believe you had a piece about Danny Green talking about how the Raptors came together quickly with the acquisition of Kawhi. Yeah, this is a similar type of situation where the Lakers are going to need. Now, they've got a lot of vets, and, like, I keep saying this, but a lot of guys with a lot of stuff to prove, right? Not just AD, not just LeBron, but a Boogie, right? Like, Boogie lost how $100 million possibly in how things have gone, right? And he's got to show that he's back at that level. So, yeah, that sort of getting together is going to be really beneficial for this roster. As far as Anthony Davis is, like, Anthony Davis has the fundamental core component, the talent to work with, that can be built off of to be able to make improvements. Like, the ball handling ability is there while having some technical issues. Like, yeah, you're absolutely right. He leans forward and he gets his head in front of his feet, and that's going to make him less on balance on those driving kicks. It's also going to be harder for him to see guys who are open when he's leaned over.
Further,
so can he get to the point?
The further it drops, your eye level drops.
The further it drops and your eye level drops, you're going to start looking through bodies instead of over them. He's not going to be taking advantage of his height. That's actually something LeBron can help with. LeBron utilizes jump passes, which is, you know, we're always taught don't jump to pass players, but we're also not, most of us aren't 6'8" with, you know, yeah, crazy hops, right? So a guy like LeBron, that's something he could transfer over to AD, where like, hey, when you get to this spot, it's usually around the free throw line extended, which is where the decision zone is, right around those elbows, of whether or not you're going to continue driving to the rim to score or looking to kick out. That's where you're making that. If you're deciding to kick it out, plant a foot in the ground, get up in the air, and throw that overhead pass. So it's, you're throwing it downward to your, yeah, teammate with extra velocity. When you're 7 feet tall, 6'11", whatever, like that's Anthony Davis, that's coming down quick, and it's going to be hard to get hands on that.
Yeah.
So, just little things like, but he has the fundamental core components. You're not asking JaVale McGee to do this, right? Yeah, JaVale McGee could jump pat, right? But he doesn't have the ball handling ability. Davis has the talent, and I firmly believe that the ball handling, and to a lesser extent, the playmaking element, is talent untapped. And Phil Handy, I'm hoping, can be a guy that can really maximize what AD is capable of, because it's there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. If I was asked, hey, work with one NBA player out there, who would you work with? Davis is pretty high up on that list. Like, he would be,
sure,
as far as guys I would like to just coach individually, that would be a lot of fun. Just like,
because you can do everything. This? You can do everything. Yes, absolutely.
right. Yeah. Let's talk about the defensive end individually. Have you done much film work on technique he uses in pick and roll and switches and rim protection and stuff like that?
Almost all of my film work so far has been on the offensive end. I'm going to do, because he's a guy that was 2 years ago top three in defensive player of the year,
yeah,
voting. When he's a guy that is one of the very best big man defenders in the game. So before really digging into the tape, I mean, we all know he's good, but I don't want to act like I know something that I don't. I haven't done that research yet.
Yeah, I think for me, it's a question of, without getting into specifics, because again, I neither have I. The Lakers are going to be asking him to do quite a bit, right? Depending on the starting lineup that he's out there with, if it's Bradley, Green, LeBron, Davis, and Boogie, he's going to have to cover for at least LeBron and probably Boogie to a certain extent out there. Bradley can defend at the point of attack. Green is going to take the other team's best wing. But Davis is going to be asked to clean up a little bit in that specific lineup, if that is indeed the lineup that they roll out there with as starters. And, you know, I think obviously he's capable of doing those things. It's just a matter of if he can get back to that. Because, look, I'm just going to just to be completely frank, I don't think it was possible for him to care about defense last year. He spent an entire year away from caring about defense, and that's hard to get back to.
Yeah, it was a weird situation on several levels, and that is something that, you know, Pelicans fans and bloggers have pointed out, that he was not particularly great on the defensive end last season. I do think that, I mean, and like you said, it makes sense. In this whole dynamic, one of the bigger keys is how many minutes he plays with Boogie, because they do fit together very well on the offensive end, but defensively, Boogie's going to have a hard time defending the pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
So how often do you have to have AD on the guy who's going to be the primary screen setter? And is that pulling AD away from the basket in certain matchups? Do you just have AD in a drop coverage, which will allow him to protect the rim? But I'm wondering how much at this point, post-Achilles, that AD is going to have to be covering for Boogie in those lineups, whereas JaVale can provide a little bit more versatility in what AD do on the defensive end. So that's going to be something that I really keep an eye on.
Yep, I agree. All right, let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we're going to talk about more of the team construct here and then our expectations for AD moving forward, which are pretty lofty. And we already talked about MVP stuff, so we're going to get to that here in a bit. What do you think it would take for Anthony Davis to win MVP?
I think the Lakers need to be a top three or four seed in the West. I think he needs to be the leading scorer on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're looking at like a 27-12 type of year while playing 75 games. How about you? What do you think?
I would agree on all fronts. The one that concerns me the most in his candidacy is going to be whether or not the Lakers particularly care about stacking up as many wins as it's going to take to get him there, right? Because, at the end of the day, if you were to ask me, all right, what do I care more about, an Anthony Davis MVP or having everybody healthy come playoff time? And you're going to have guys, by the way, who, you know, Davis did play, you know, have two straight years before last year of playing 75 games, right? But his game is such that he can be banged up from time to time. LeBron James is coming off of the worst injury of his career. DeMarcus Cousins had two hugely debilitating injuries that he's dealing with. And, you know, if you were to ask me, all right, where do my priorities lie here? Just get these guys all healthy to the playoffs, because it's going to be a terrifying playoff team. This is the thing that I don't think has gotten enough coverage, in my opinion, to this point about the Lakers, is how daunting a playoff team they could be. They are built for the playoffs. They are built to slow down and beat the ever living piss out of their opponent. And that, to me, is exponentially more important than getting AD and putting him in that situation to win that award. The one point I would add to that, though, and it's not in disagreement, is that we are reaching a point here where those wins are starting to mean a little bit less. Like where the total number of wins are starting to mean a little bit less. It's more about on-off type numbers and team-wide impact and those kinds of things, more than, okay, best player on the best team of the regular season.
Yeah, and what the Lakers prioritize will, you know, I think it'll be that. That said, they can't assume too much in this Western Conference. No. I agree that they're going to need to be healthy for the, you know, for the postseason. But this isn't a LeBron and Cleveland situation where it's like, hey, let's screw around for the first half of the season. And then, you know, in the final 6 weeks, we kind of hit our stride and get ready, because, you know, the Lakers don't want to be a 7 or 8 seed or something like that. No. Right. And in the West, that you're going to be separated by not a lot. So I do hope there's a certain degree of thrive. That was one thing I thought was missing at the beginning of last season, that they did get their stride, but then LeBron got injured. I do hope that there is some sense of urgency, and not just the assumption that, well, we've got AD and LeBron, therefore it's all good. They're actually going to have to go out and get it done.
Yeah. Is there anything the Lakers specifically need to do to put Davis in just a generally optimized situation? Like, if there's one thing that you're hoping to see from the Lakers as this year goes along, one particular, you know, whether it's schematics, whether it's spacing, whether it's whatever, what have you, what do you think that one thing, how do you think the Lakers can put Davis in the absolute best situation to be able to showcase how good he is?
I think you need 3 above average shooters on the court at all times with AD. I think that's how you get the most out of him. That's something that the Pelicans always struggled to do. They'd have one guy, they'd have an Etuan Moore or Darius Miller off of the bench. But having guys like Danny Green, who can play 30 minutes a game, you know, some of the other shooters that the Lakers signed that can play those role player minutes, even Boogie, like Boogie getting his 3-point shot back, same thing with Kuzma. Those will, you know, if those guys are average 3-point shooters, I think you see the absolute most out of AD, because he really thrives in space in the same way that LeBron does, in that you just simply can't defend him with one guy. And so the Lakers need to pull those other defenders away from both him and LeBron in order to get the most out of them in a way that the Lakers weren't able to do last year.
Yep, I completely agree. Last thing, and it's going to be a storyline, I would imagine, for the majority of the year. It's going to be something we probably hear about once, maybe even twice a week, is going to be the decision he makes at the end of the season. There is, like, what... If you don't want to hear about worst-case scenarios, then you could probably turn off the podcast now, or at least skip ahead, like, a minute or so. but, like, what type of a situation, like, how badly would things have to go for you to feel uncomfortable about Davis's decision at the end of the year?
I think that LeBron would have to suffer a really serious, like, Kobe Achilles type of injury in order for that to happen. There aren't a ton of teams next summer that have the money to court him. And like, is Anthony Davis really going to leave the Lakers for Dallas? I mean, it's possible, right?
Yeah.
He fought pretty hard to be here. They're, AD and LeBron are in the same family. It's not a Kobe Dwight situation.
Yeah.
Right. Like they are.
He was over for Taco Tuesday.
He was over for Taco Tuesday. They're obviously both clutch guys, and the clutch circle is very tight. Stranger things have happened, but I feel very good about the Lakers' chances of retaining him. I tend to skew a little more optimistic than you do on these things, though. So I'm curious what your perspective is.
I think it really all comes down to I would be shocked, honestly, if he didn't re-sign. And even, that's me being the pessimist. I would be legitimately floored, and the Lakers would be legitimately fucked if that happened. but I would I think I would be shocked. I think what it would have to do a lot with is, okay, is the LeBron circus really everything everybody warns you against? Right. It does AD feel like the scapegoat every time they lose a game they should have won? Right. Does Anthony Davis feel like he's second fiddle even while, LeBron is out there trying to change that narrative? Those kinds of things, I think, will go further because at the end of the day, that's what he's signing up for. Right. At least for next year. The immediate future is what he would be signing up for to stick around with. And you know what? Like, that LeBron circus is just that. It is a bit of a circus. And I don't, Chris Bosh had to deal with a bunch of crap. Kevin Love had to deal with a bunch of crap. The one, I guess, counter and the thing that makes me feel a little bit better about Davis dealing with that kind of stuff is that he's going to be the second, not the third best player in those situations, if not the first.
Absolutely. I do think that's why it's different. And secondly, I think that AD's been craving some more circus, right? Like more limelight. He wants more attention. He's a cover athlete on 2K20. I tell you what, if he puts up one of them 52-17 games, I'm making a badass video about it. We're having a whole podcast about it.
Yep.
It's the lead thing on SportsCenter, on House of Highlights, on all them places. Like, you do not go unnoticed doing the things that Anthony Davis does if you're doing them with the Lakers. So now there's always the possibility that he tries it out, it ain't what he thought it was, and he wants to go back to a quiet type of existence. Just none of the indicators really point that way. So I think the Lakers are in good shape.
Yeah, I do too. I think this, we talked last show that you and I got together when we were talking about LeBron, about things that storylines that I'm most fascinated by. And LeBron having one final haymaker is still the thing that I'm looking forward to the most, because, you only get these kinds of seasons once, really.
And he's got a legitimate superstar next to him. Anthony Davis is a legit superstar. He's a top 5 to 7 guy in the NBA. And when he's gotten to the playoffs, he's done some big time things there too. So this is not, I've got an all-star caliber guy. This is like a guy who's in the conversation amongst the best players in the game.
Yeah. And this is, when it pertains to Davis, the storyline, the aspect of this year that I'm looking forward to most is him staking out his claim really once and for all as, no, I'm not top 7. I'm not even top 5. I should be in the top 3 best players in this effing league. And that's the thing that I'm really, really excited for. And he's more than capable of doing it, by the way.
That's the thing. It's not an unrealistic goal whatsoever. And you could have made the argument he was already that 2 years ago when he finished top 3 in the MVP voting and top 3 in the Defensive Player of the Year. That's the thing, is there are only 2 other guys at the top of the, of the NBA food chain these days who can really make that type of impact on both ends, and that's Kawhi and Giannis, along with Anthony Davis, who can be great defensive players while giving you 35 on the other end.
Yeah.
Paul George can do that from time to time, but he's not on that same caliber, at least in my book, as those three. So yeah, by the end of this year, that should be Anthony Davis's goal. He got a 94 rating in 2K20. He was, yeah, I think, the seventh best guy there. And he's, you know, I got people like me saying he's top five or seven or somewhere in there. That should be a laughable statement by the end of this year. He's right entering his prime. He's got the best perimeter shot creator he's ever worked with, and a guy who I think is in LeBron, who's going to be willing to hand the crown over to him if he earns it. You know, like, yeah, he's, LeBron understands that this team will be at its best if Anthony Davis is considered one of the baddest MFers in the league. Yeah. And we're not talking top seven, but top three.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, he's playing for a franchise, an all-time great franchise, who is looking for their next all-time great, desperate to name their next statue type player, right?
Absolutely.
That's what the Lakers are. They're going to be pushing it all year long across all their platforms. They want this so badly. Everybody right in LA wants this so badly. And he can, all he has to do is go out there and grab it. He's more than capable of doing it.
Absolutely spot on, man. We've been talking about how, like, this fan base is ready to explode. I've said this so many times, and it also wants somebody to love. Yeah. LeBron came here as one of the gods. Mm-hmm. And no matter how long he's here, I am so appreciative of LeBron. Anthony Davis probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for LeBron. That LeBron chose here. LeBron, I think, will always feel to me like he belongs to somebody else. I hope that's not the case, and that doesn't mean I'm not rooting for him or saying, you know, that making it a Kobe versus, yeah, LeBron thing. But I hope you understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, no, I agree.
Whereas he's also not as approachable since he's one of the gods, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the things I've noticed, that I noticed at AD's press conference, both on camera and when the cameras went off, is like, this is a really good, like, likable dude. Like, yeah, he's really approachable. He's funny. He's thoughtful. He's a guy that I could really see the Lakers fan base latching onto in a way that's probably going to be hard for us to latch on to LeBron. And that's nothing against LeBron.
No, but yeah,
AD could be a guy that feels like our guy. And if that coincides with our first playoff season in seven seasons and AD putting up 27-12 and him being on the right end of highlights next to LeBron James, like, yeah, this the formula is there. The recipe is there for this to be a really exciting season and one of those, like, really defining years in a great player's career.
Yep. I completely agree. It's going to be an incredible ride. I can't wait to watch this. We've already gone through now three player previews. The next show that you guys listen to will be on Monday. That will be a mailbag show between Pete and I. So if you guys have any questions, make sure you guys get them in the form of a 5-star iTunes review, and we promise we will get to those. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you on Monday.